Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, there certainly was a lot to react to from the mayor of Kansas City. He just joined us on the show, 913-586-7965. You guys are certainly free to chime in. If you want to call in, text in, however you want to respond to what the mayor had to say, we're certainly happy to hear it. All right. Now, Rob, I don't really know what the PC term for this is, or I don't really know like what the regular term is, but in a slang term, Rob, they would call this dirty mackin'. And dirty mackin' is, let's say that you and I were both fighting for the same girl. And then behind your back, I would say kind of mean things about you to her. So she would look down on you and favor me. I think it is very, very obvious. After now, we have had representatives on from both sides. We have had Missouri senators. We've had Kansas senators. We've had we have had people on both sides of this. I think it is very clear what the message is, at least to the Chiefs and the Royals from both sides. The Missouri message, have you noticed, Rob, it's been pretty constant from the Missouri side is, hey, those star bonds, that 70% that you guys keep throwing, that's not as concrete, that's not as real as everyone perceives it to be. A little bit of funny money. Hey, you guys keep touting how great this deal is and how incredible this package is, but in actuality, when you really go through it, it's not as good. That is the Missouri side of it. I'm not telling you it's right or wrong, but we can sit here and we can play quotes from Missouri where Missouri government officials have said, hey, that Kansas deal isn't really the deal that everybody thinks that it is. It isn't as sweet. It isn't as you got to take this offer as much as they want you to believe. I think on the other side is the Kansas side is pretty simple. You don't have to deal with them anymore. I think the Kansas side is pretty simple. Come over here and you never have to talk to Frank White again. You never have to deal with the city of Kansas City. You guys have been going back and forth with them and dealing with this for years. Come over here and see how much nicer and easier it's going to be. We will accommodate you. We will work together. We want to be on the same page with this thing moving forward. I think that has been the message from the very, very beginning. They're dysfunctional over there. You don't want to be over there anymore. It's so much better over here. Come over here. That even if you're the Royals, that I think it is obvious, at least just from what the Royals have said, the Royals have never really sold you this dream of moving to the suburbs. They've never really sold you this dream of, well, our goal is to move to Kansas. No, they've sold you the dream of downtown baseball. Now, they tried it the first time. It failed pretty miserably the first time, but I still think in a lot of ways they are holding on to that dream. You just heard the mayor of Kansas City say, we have put a package together to keep the Royals. That now it comes down to, can we make the finances work? Can we make all of the things work? But the state of Missouri has put together a package to keep the Royals, and the city of Kansas City has also put a package together. And if you listen to what the mayor just said, they've cut Jackson County out of the conversation. The way that he talks about the Royals and the way that he talks about the Chiefs are two drastically different things. He talks about the Royals as if the city and the Royals are working together. He talks about the Chiefs as if they don't ever have conversations with them. He talks about the Chiefs as if he doesn't really know what's going on a whole lot, that he is hearing it through the grapevine and hearing it through politics. When he asked him the question about Jackson County, he said, I'm going to pray for them. That don't sound good. Especially when the people that we believe are in charge of these negotiations, one, everybody has talked about as a roadblock, and the other one, I hate to throw his personal business out there, but his personal business is on the news every single night to the point where they want him to resign because his personal things have bled over onto the work side. So it just continues to, Rob, I think go with at least how I've felt on this. I believe the Royals are going to be in downtown Kansas City. I think ultimately the Chiefs are just going to move to Kansas because I'm not sure if the Chiefs want to continue to deal with Jackson County. And if Jackson County is at the forefront of this conversation, I think the Chiefs want to get away from them.
I think to answer your original question, you know, with the Dirty Mac in question, is it possible both sides are saying the correct thing about the other side, and that's just how it works? I think the Missouri people are correct. I think that 70% is an idea. It takes more than just sign on the dotted line that 70% exists. We've had too many people on the show that say it's not a pure, clean, and simple 70. Now, there's some, you know, ways to manipulate and maneuver. You know how politics works. They can make it a lot of money, but it ain't a true, clean 70%. I think the Missouri people that come on this show are correct to say that. And they're all, the mayor was on, it's correct to say, hey, Kansas isn't batting 1,000 with Starbonds initiatives. Prairie Fire, out by my home, is considered a large Starbond failure. However, I think what the Kansas side is pitching is also correct. Jackson County's a mess. Now, the state seems to have gotten in line, and we now know they're going to offer money. The county is a disaster. And it's not just the person who's very publicly in the news for things you don't want to be in the news for. It's the former second baseman that just can't seem to get any deal done and seems to have a personal axe to grind with the teams and was objectively a massive roadblock in getting things done ahead of the previous vote. So I think the mayor said it there without saying it. He said, we can get the Royals between state funding and local funding in downtown Kansas City without a vote. I think that is going to happen. I think if you were a no voter on April whatever last year, you're going to lose in the long run because the Royals are coming downtown and you're not getting a say-so in it anymore.
Yeah, but I don't know if, and we don't got to rehash that entire thing. I don't know if people are 100% opposed to the idea of the stadium being downtown. I think that people were opposed to, A, the where they were thinking about putting the stadium, and for as long as we've been having this conversation as a community, that is never where people envision on where the stadium was going to be, that we would just lose the crossroads now, and that we were going to put a stadium there. So I think that was some of it, and we talked about it. I think the Royals' plan was half-brained. I don't think that it really, really came together. If you believe what the mayor is saying, and you believe what Kansas City is saying, I don't know why the Royals would walk away from that deal, because in theory, it offers them everything they've told us they want. That's what it offers them. If you were saying that the Royals don't have to go to a public, and I don't know if they would win the public vote, I think you guys would give Clark Hunt the money. I don't think that John Sherman has built up enough goodwill for you guys to sign up to give him more money. I don't think you guys are very interested in that. I think you're very interested in doing that with Clark Hunt and preserving Arrowhead if that's what it takes. I don't know if you guys feel that way toward the Royals and toward their new stadium. So if you were telling me that the Royals, at least from what you are hearing, the state of Missouri has helped significantly to agree to help pay for their new stadium. They are working now directly with the city to put it in downtown. They would not have to go through the, quote, embarrassment, end quote, of a public vote. And we will give you some of the money to build the stadium where it's going to be your same original cost. I don't know if the Royals are passing that up to move to 119th and all. Especially when your entire vision, you have never once heard John Sherman speak very passionately about moving the Royals to the suburbs. He has talked very passionately about moving them to downtown Kansas City and a vision of downtown baseball. It sounds to me like the city has come up with a way to get that vision. Sure, maybe it took you 14, 16 months longer to get there, but ultimately we got the deal done and you are where you want to be in downtown Kansas City. So the Royals, it sounds to me like we are really close to the Royals at least having almost everything that they wanted from the beginning. And the Chiefs, I think we're in the same spot as before, is do you guys want to stay at Arrowhead or do you guys want a brand new stadium? And again, do you guys want to continue to deal with Jackson County or you can just start fresh and deal with Kansas?
And maybe this is the same question, just phrased differently. I think the Chiefs over in their internal conversations, because as much as they're sitting over there at the practice facility and talking about, hey, who's going to be starting left tackle and left guard and those things, there is no doubt in my mind Clark Hunt, Mark Donovan, and the entire board that runs the Kansas City Chiefs are having the conversation about the stadium. I think they are asking themselves the following question. This is, I think, the first question they're asking themselves and the whole process. Do we want to deal with Jackson County and a vote again? Because I agree with you, John Ketz on the show, Matt Evans on the show, me and you feel the same way. If they go to a vote by themselves, I think the Chiefs will get both county money and state money. I think that is going to happen. The question is, do the Chiefs want to go through that process again? Because it wasn't just the vote. And I think people forget this. There was a lot of problematic moments leading up to the vote, more than just the Royals' plan. The Chiefs' plan, by the way, came in late. The Chiefs' plan that came in was underwhelming. It felt like there were kept being hangups and situations where, oh, it might not go to a vote. It might go to a vote. Like, there was a lot of politicking that had to happen just to get on the ballot. And then on the ballot, the Royals had a bad plan, but the Chiefs' plan was underwhelming. And the Chiefs' plan was presented, what, a month, 3 weeks before the vote? It wasn't like they had their plan out in January and they said, here it is. So do the Chiefs want to deal with all that again? That's one of the major questions over at One Arrowhead Drive. If they are willing to do that, because they will need a vote, if they're willing to do that, I think they are staying. But that is a massive if in my mind, because it's not just we want to vote, bing, bang, boom, we're on the ballot, and we're going to pass. There's a lot of hurdles still to overcome.
I also think it's very important to note in all of this that the Chiefs did not sell a very passionate stadium renovation plan. You can tell when a team is, hey, this is what we want to do. This is really important. We want to have this happen. It's not kind of how the Chiefs sold last time. The Chiefs kind of sold it as, I mean, you guys are giving money away. I guess we'll take some of it too. That we have this sales tax. Technically, we get half of the money. We have to share it with the Royals. I mean, it's much more their plan than our plan. But I mean, if you guys are giving money away, I mean, we'll do something with the money. Here, we'll put some heaters up there for you guys. We'll renovate the concession stand. We'll do these things for you. I would love to see what a real renovation plan looks like. I ask this question almost every time we have this conversation, and no one has been able to tell me. I still have absolutely no clue of what the Chiefs planned on doing at the site where Kauffman Stadium is. They used activation zone and never really explained what they were trying to do. Like, none, not even a little bit. So I'd love to know, out of the $1.1 billion that they are saying they need for a renovation, what does that mean for what we presume is going to be an empty lot on where a baseball stadium used to go? I would love to see what that plan is. Let me ask you this question. Hypothetical, obviously not a realistic situation. Indianapolis is, we talked about earlier, Indianapolis is very similar to Kansas City. They have an NFL team. We have an NFL team. They have a basketball team. We have a baseball team. Don't have any other professional sports teams. Not in the major sports, but we have, they have a WNBA team. We have an MLS team. They have a racetrack. We have a racetrack, et cetera. You guys get the point I'm making. Tomorrow, if there was a vote where Kansas City would take the Pacers and then Kansas City would then give them the Royals, do you think it passes? Like, if Indianapolis called up and you could trade teams the way that teams trade players, do you think that Kansas City would trade the Royals for the Pacers straight up?
That's really, really interesting question. No. I think if you put it to a vote, Kansas City would say no. Because for whatever reason, and I can't really wrap my arms around the why, and I don't seem to like that this is a thing, but it is a thing. Kansas City just is not just like dislikes the NBA. They are like outgoingly anti-NBA. So I think if you polled the average Kansas Cityan and said, you get the Pacers but you give up the Royals, they would say no because of their very loud dislike for the NBA, which, again, I can't explain that dislike. It doesn't really make any sense to me. Basketball is popular in Kansas City. We see it at the college level. It thrives in Kansas City at the college level, but the minute they get paid by ownership versus an NIL collective, the city just tunes out. So I think the city would say no, but I don't know that's a good answer, but that's my best answer.
I think it'd be close. I think it'd be like 60-40. I think it would pass. Like, I think in this hypothetical, I think Kansas City would vote to keep the Royals. I think there would be a large portion that would be like, yeah, I'm fine with that. I think there are a large portion of people that would be fine to make the trade straight up. I know this. Someone said, I'd rather have a hockey team. You are not trading the Royals for any hockey team. That gets resoundingly shot down. I just don't think there's enough people that are really into hockey. I also think the NBA is kind of one of those things that I'm guessing a lot of you don't like the NBA because you just don't have a rooting interest in the NBA. You just don't have a rooting interest. That if there was a team that had Kansas City on their chest and they played down there, I think a lot of you would be surprised at how much you actually like the NBA. You like a lesser version of it now. You love a lesser version of it now. In fact, we celebrate a lesser version of it. There's a Hall of Fame in downtown Kansas City that is attributed to a lesser version of the NBA. Can you imagine if you could then keep watching Christian Brown play and he maybe plays for the Kansas City team? You'd be super excited about that. So I agree with you, Rob. I don't think it would pass. I think that Kansas City would vote to keep the Royals. I think it'd be like 60-40, though. I think there'd be a lot of people that'd be happy to trade the baseball team for Indianapolis' basketball team if it was a straight-up one-to-one trade.
I think it would be close. I agree with you. I don't think it would be a resounding like 90-10. But I think the Royals would be the team they keep. Now, I mean, it's a tier down, but if you said current versus the Fever, I think the Fever would win in
Just has Caitlin Clark.
Yeah,
on
has Caitlin
team.
Clark. Yeah. But like I think most cities outside of like the Lakers are like the best franchise in the history of the NBA. I think most NBA teams Kansas City would vote no on. And I agree with you, they'd also vote no on the NHL. But I'm not as sold as you are that they would vote no on the NHL. I think that would be close, too.
I don't know if they would trade Oak Park Mall for the hockey team. I'm serious. I don't know. I'm honest. I really don't know if that's the case. A lot of people are saying we had an NBA team. They left for Sacramento. A lot of us just don't. I'm under 40 years old. So, like, hearing the stories of how the team, like, that's just never been part of my life. I obviously know that happened, but I don't know if there's a lot of people today. Like, I don't know if your average 37-year-old that's not into the NBA. I don't know if they're not into the NBA because of the Kansas City Kings moved to Sacramento before we were born. I just don't really think that's it. I think a lot of it is, and I get it. I know a lot of people that are like this. Hey, I really like basketball, but I like watching Missouri play or KU play or K-State play. If you remove the rooting interest for it, I'm not super interested in basketball. That makes sense. Like, I don't know if baseball would be super popular here if we didn't have a baseball team. Like, I'm guessing in San Antonio, baseball ain't super popular. I'm just going to go out on that limb and guess that people in San Antonio just don't love Major League Baseball. You do because you have a team, which makes sense. It has your city logo on it. They represent you. You get to go to the game. So I do think if the NBA was here, people would get behind it and support it. If the NBA can work in Oklahoma City and Milwaukee, it could absolutely work in Kansas City. I'm convinced of it. They just don't have a team. All right, coming up on the other side. Rob, I actually made a list based off hearing what Kingsley Suamataia said earlier today. I wrote a list of who I think the five most interesting Chiefs players are heading into the season. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
All right, I made a list. This is what I made a list of. I was thinking of this because Kingsley Suamataia met with the media earlier today. But before I play that for you, I want to play what Andy Reid had to say about Kingsley Suamataia, who met with the media today. He was asked about his development at guard.
Yeah, it looked like he learned as he went. It was rough, obviously, early. And expectations are high. You come into a championship caliber team and thrown in there at left tackle, and it's not always the easiest thing for a young guy. So, but I think it was a great experience and I think that'll tell itself out as he goes forward.
So that was Andy Reid talking about Kingsley at left guard. Kingsley Suamataia, he met with the media. He said he's excited about this.
Went against one of the best D tackles, and I got some good words from him after the game. So. Definitely stuff to take in and just to improve on.
What did he say?
Just said, for playing guard my first time, he said I did pretty good. So, and I've known him growing up. So,
who was it?
Zach Allen. Yep.
All right, I made a list for you guys. I think you guys will appreciate this list. These are the five most important Chiefs players to me. Obviously, this team's not good if Patrick Mahomes isn't good. I think we get all of that. But I think these are the guys that they're going to need to have big season from. that move the needle that are very important to the Chiefs getting back to a fourth straight Super Bowl. Number one, Rob, you remember how on the Knicks, I could tell you how the Knicks performed solely based off how Josh Hart played. I don't think Josh Hart was their best player. I don't think he was close to their best player. But if you just showed me Josh Hart's stat line, I could tell you how the Knicks play, and I could tell you if they won or lost. This season, I can tell you how good the Chiefs' offense is based off Hollywood Brown. Just him. I don't need to see anybody else's offensive numbers, just Hollywood Brown's. If Hollywood Brown's offensive numbers are like they were last year where he was hurt, the Chiefs were 17th in points scored last year. They didn't have Hollywood Brown for basically the entire season. Their offense was kind of eh. Now, they had other injuries, sure. You just got to show me one person. If you showed me right now that Hollywood Brown had 825 yards, I find it hard to believe that the Chiefs don't have a top five offense in the National Football League next season. If he has that kind of season, a lot of other things went really, really good for the offense. So Hollywood Brown is near the top of my list. I'm being serious. I don't need to see the production of really anybody else on their offense other than Hollywood Brown to tell you how well their season was and what the ceiling of their offense was. They lost him from the very beginning. Their ceiling just wasn't going to be super high. It's a game of numbers. How many different weapons, how many different guys can you throw at teams? Having him in the mix, even if you have an injury to Rice, even if you have an injury to Worthy, and he's stepping up and having a big year and having a game where he has six catches for 85 yards and a touchdown, that'll tell me how good the Chiefs' offense can be. So he's number one on my list. I will continue to bang the drum. We know Rob's not going to bang it. Isaiah Pacheco. Every move that they made in the running back room this offseason was based off of Isaiah Pacheco was going to be back. He's going to return to normal, and he's going to be healthy. I know that you guys put everything that went wrong last year on the offense on their offensive line, and I get that point. One of the things for me is when the Chiefs are one-dimensional and can't get dynamic plays from their run game, they're a kind of easy offense to deal with. Now, you still got to deal with Mahomes and his ability to improvise, and you still got to deal with Andy Reid and his creativity. But when you make the Chiefs largely one-dimensional or you take away explosiveness in the run game and the Chiefs have those games where Mahomes throws it 12 out of 13 times and they're not balanced, you can manage the Chiefs' offense. Them getting back to having an explosive run game, and I'm not saying you need to be elite at it, but if you end up having a guy that runs for 900 yards, that gives you 4.6 yards per carry, and just gives you some kind of home run threat, it drastically changes their offense. So I got Hollywood Brown and Isaiah Pacheco. Two of the guys on the offensive line seem very, very simple to me. Kingsley Suamataia and Jalen Moore. Every offseason question that the Chiefs have is based off one concept. How do you feel about the left side of their offensive line? For the most part, they didn't really change anything on offense. I mean, the running back room is largely the same. The tight ends are the same. They brought back all the same wide receivers. Their team on offense is very, very similar to the one that played in the Super Bowl. What they are hoping is, A, guys can stay healthy. You'll have Rashee Rice. You'll have Hollywood Brown be healthy. That's one thing that you're counting on. You're also counting that you didn't take too much of a dip at on the left side of that offensive line. So Kingsley Suamataia and Jalen Moore, however you want to flip them on the list, this guy's more important than the other guy. One plays left tackle, one plays left guard. I'm perfectly fine with having that conversation when it comes to positional value. But the biggest question heading into the offseason for this team is, what about the left side? It's really one of their few question marks. The Chiefs don't have many question marks on their team. You might not love the answer, but you at least know what the answer is. You know their safeties. You know the linebackers. You know the corners. You know the offensive pieces. I don't think anybody can tell you how the left side is going to go for the Kansas City Chiefs. They have a left guard who doesn't have a lot of experience and a left tackle that doesn't have a lot of experience. So those are two of my other people. The last person on this list is Charles Omenihu. His impact in the second half of the season, you could see. George Karlaftis was a different player when he was on the field, but it didn't really register into numbers for Charles Omenihu. He had six tackles last year. He had one sack last season. He wasn't a guy that really had a big year and put together a big season. Now, he was injured. missed a significant amount of time. If you're going to have him from day one and you're telling me that their plan is going to be Charles Omenihu, George Karloftis, Chris Jones, and then everybody else sort of get in where they fit in, and you get back to having a dynamic pass rush, one that can get after the other team's quarterback and continue to be disruptive, we're talking about, once again, one of the five best defenses in the National Football League. I trust their linebackers. I like the Christian Fulton move a lot. I think it gives them a lot of versatility at corner. I think they got a very young and talented secondary with the safety position. There's a lot of things to like about their defense. I do think there's a question on that other side, and the question is just going to be Charles Omenihu. His two first seasons have just been disrupted by something. He had the off-the-field issue when they first acquired him from San Francisco. He then got hurt and then missed a large portion of last season. This is the first offseason with Omenihu where there's no baggage, there's no off the field. He's now healthy going into the year. We've never seen that version of Charles Omenihu for the Chiefs. So those are my five most interesting Chiefs heading into their offseason as we're winding down their offseason workouts. It's Kingsley Suamataia, Charles Omenihu, Jalen Moore, Isaiah Pacheco, and Hollywood Brown. Those are the five most interesting Chiefs as we are heading into the offseason.
I know we're up against break, so I'll make this question quick. Are you counting Jalen Moore as a backslash 1A with Josh Simmons? Because I think Jalen Moore and Josh Simmons are equally, if not one, is more interesting than the other. I actually think Josh Simmons is more interesting than Jalen Moore. But if you're just lumping them in as is Jalen Moore backslash Josh Simmons, I won't fight with you. But I think Josh Simmons is far more interesting to me this year than Jalen Moore, because everything you hear out of OTAs and minicamp and everything is, hey, rehab's going great for Josh Simmons, and when he was healthy, he was one of the best tackles in college football last year, and if he's healthy for this year, you would presume he's better than the Niners' backup from last year. I think Josh Simmons should be on your list ahead of Jalen Moore.
And you know my stance on this. If you were telling me that the Chiefs are paying a top 10 salary at left tackle for their backup, something went wrong. I understand you can't foresee the NFL draft. You don't know how the draft is going to shake out. I mean, we're talking about the Jalen Moore for this upcoming season. He's making Jordan Mailata money. Like, he's making Jake Matthews money. He's making top for the 1 year. He's making $21 million guaranteed. If that's what you are paying for your backup left tackle, something went wrong. And there was just a better way for you to use those funds. You could have used that funds at wide receiver. You could have used those funds on pass rush. There were just other things that you could have spent $21 million on other than what in this case would be a breaking case of emergency if something goes wrong at left tackle. So I'm looking at it, and I've looked at it like this from the beginning, as a redshirt year. Start Jalen Moore for this year. You got Juwan Taylor. If an injury happens, it's the NFL. Then you put the young guy in there. And this is a two-year process to getting him on the field where he either plays left tackle next year because Jalen Moore, you move him over to the right side, or you put him in at right tackle. But I've been very clear about this. I would start Jalen Moore this year. You have paid for him to be your starting left tackle. And if you're going to talk about salary cap league and resources and all of those things, I'm not paying Jake Matthews, Garrett Bowles money for my backup left tackle. I just don't think that's a great resource of how you can use the limited cap space that you have. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Catch Hall of Famer Denny Matthews every Monday at 3.
And gone, Bobby Witt.
On your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. If you missed it, the mayor of Kansas City was on the show about an hour ago. We'll play some of that for you coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. He reacted to the passing of the stadium funding bill in the state of Missouri. The stadium funding bill would help pay for a new stadium for the Royals and stadium renovations for the Chiefs to remain at Arrowhead. Before we get to that, I want to play this audio for you guys. Magic Johnson was on ESPN earlier today, and he was asked a very interesting question. How would you define a superstar? Here's what Magic Johnson had to say.
A person who can go on the road and sell the building.
There we go. That's a simple definition.
Simple. I'm going to see that person, mm-hmm. right?
So you ain't talking skill on the court. That's it. You talk about
draw.
The box office.
Yeah, you got to be
Magic's
box office.
Magic's in town. You're going to the game.
Yeah, a superstar got to say, man, or you running home from the office and saying, oh, I got to see him on TV, mm-hmm. right? And that's what you, Larry Bird, people running home, right? Charles Barkley, people running home. Shaq, people running home. Kobe, people running home. And then, of course, the greatest that's ever played, Michael Jordan, people going running home to see him. Or they're trying their best to get into the arena to see that brother play. That's a superstar who could go on the road and sell the building out.
Rob and I were talking about this earlier, and Rob actually doesn't think that that is a good definition of what a superstar is. Really quick point, because I do want you to give your answer. This argument to me is a lot like the Hall of Fame. You and I argue a lot about Mike Evans and is he a Hall of Famer or not. And I've never told you that I don't think Mike Evans is a great player. He obviously is a great player. If we have to spend the amount of time arguing, then you're just not a Hall of Famer, and that the bar should be so high on what a Hall of Famer is that you just know. We don't have to have those arguments about Randy Moss. We know he's a Hall of Famer. You don't need to have these arguments about Barry Sanders. He's just a Hall of Famer. So that's what I think the bar should be. Now, somewhere along the line, we started just letting other guys in, and then if you just had nice round fantasy football numbers, we started letting you into the Hall of Fame. That's not what a Hall of Famer is to me. What I would define as a superstar is part of what he's talking about. I think that's a major part of it. Do you go to the game because of this person? Does he drive interest? Does he drive merch? I also think part of being a superstar today is, do you command conversations? Do people talk about you? Do people have an opinion? There are so many famous people now. There's so many celebrities that just because you are a really good baseball player or a really good basketball player, that is not the only criteria of being a superstar. What's your social media engagement? How involved are you in pop culture? Do you move the needle? Are people going to the store to buy your tennis shoes? Are people buying products because you tell them to buy products? That, to me, is what a superstar is. Caitlin Clark is not just a superstar because she's really good at basketball. She is a superstar because she is a pop culture icon at this point. That she can go out there and tell young girls, hey, I think you guys should buy this makeup, and they will buy it. Taylor Swift is not the biggest musician in the world just because people like her songs. Because people are very, very into her personal life, and she moves the needle and can control what people do. That's what makes you a superstar. So by this definition of superstar, my bar is just really high. You got to be LeBron. You got to be Steph. You got to be Patrick Mahomes. You got to be Lionel Messi for me to put you in the conversation of you being a superstar. You can be a great player. Of course, there's a lot of great players. But to be a superstar, to be somebody that a brand would put a campaign, a company would put you in commercials, you got to be a superstar to do that. And I just don't know if there's a lot of superstars that are out there.
So I don't think Magic Johnson is totally wrong here. I think it's part of the formula. How much of a draw are you singularly? But I think Magic Johnson is looking at this, and I understand why, through an NBA lens. Because that criteria, as the criteria, does not work for their sports. Carrington, you and I were on remote at Kauffman Stadium 2 days ago. The building was not sold out. Is Aaron Judge not a superstar anymore? Shohei Ohtani is not selling out Rockies games. He's not. No one's going to Rockies games because the Rockies. Does that diminish his superstardom? How many times has Arrowhead been jam-packed and it's the Jags are in town? I was at a playoff game of the Jags. No one was there to see Trevor Lawrence, but he's the up-and-coming guy. He was.
Yeah, but Trevor Lawrence
point.
Isn't a superstar. No,
I was cherry-picking my point. I think Magic is correct, and it's part of the formula, and I think he's correct for it being the formula in the NBA, but if you apply that logic singularly to other sports, it falls apart, and it falls apart fast.
Yeah, but I would argue, though, I'm with you. No, Kauffman Stadium was not sold out, but I do think that Aaron Judge is one of those players that when his team is coming to your town, you are buying a ticket because you want to see him play. I think that's the point more than anything. Do we think that people in Tampa Bay, when the Royals are coming to town, oh, I want to see Bobby Witt Jr. play. I'm going out to the park. Bobby Witt Jr. is an incredible baseball player. He's maybe the best shortstop. We could name a lot of other really good players in baseball. Is he one of those individuals that you think people are buying a ticket for to go see him? So that's why when we have the conversation right now in the NBA about Tyrese Halliburton, Tyrese Halliburton's a great player. Ain't nobody going to the gym to watch Tyrese Halliburton play basketball. Phenomenal player. He might win finals MVP. He's been amazing, hit big shots. He's not a superstar. I think somewhere along the line, we've like blurred the line between what it means to be a good player, what it means to be a great player, and what it means to be an all-time iconic player. All-time. That's what I was making by Mike Evans. I think Mike Evans is a great wide receiver. Is he an all-time wide receiver? The answer for me is no. The answer for you is yes. Cool. That's what makes it a fun debate. So I think there are a lot of stars in the game. Jimmy Butler is a star. Great player. We all know who Jimmy Butler is. He is not a superstar to me. That's just like the 1% of the 1%. You and I can name a lot of very popular musicians. A superstar is Beyonce. A superstar is Adele. A superstar is Taylor Swift. Those are superstars. I think the same thing is in sports. Caitlin Clark, Steph Curry, LeBron, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady. Those are superstars. If we got a debate, if you're on that level, that special it, that thing that can put you on the cover of a Wheaties box, the thing that will get kids to go run and buy your tennis shoes, then you're just not a superstar. You're just a great football player or a great athlete. Coming up on the other side, we'll get to the top stories of the day. If you missed it, we also had the mayor of Kansas City on the show to react to the stadium funding bill being passed in the state of Missouri. That's all coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
What if everything you learned in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.